Welcome to Church in the North, a podcast by ministry leaders and for ministry leaders. I'm your host, Rob Chartrand, Program Coordinator for Christian Ministry at Briarcrest College. And I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dresser, Assistant Professor of Worship Arts. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Rob.
And Dan Goddard, Lead Pastor of Victory Church. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks everyone for jumping in on our conversation today. But before we dive in, I think it's important to encourage our listeners that if you like what you're hearing on our podcast, please leave us a review or share your comments or hit that subscribe button for great content from north of the 49th parallel. Also, if you have suggestions for topics or maybe guests or even if you've got some questions, you can email us at podcast@briarcrest.ca. That's podcast@briarcrest.ca, because we would love to hear from you.
That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Love those comments. Hey, guys, let's check in. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks since we've been together. We took a long break for Easter, and you guys had a busy week at Victory Church. What was going on? I mean, you had a jam-packed Easter Sunday, of course, but you hosted a special event on Friday, Good Friday, as a matter of fact. What was that all about?
Yeah, we hosted the Moose Jaw, all the churches get together for a Good Friday service. And so it was our church's turn to host it. So we, even though we don't have the largest facility in Moose Jaw, we hosted and we crammed in as many people as we could. And it was a great time, very encouraging to see all the churches coming together and working together to put together that service. And then worshiping together was awesome.
That's great. So, is this something, Dan, they do every year? Is it kind of part of the rhythm?
Yeah, Moose Jaw is pretty special in that the churches get along really well, the evangelical churches anyway, and there's a really good spirit between the pastors.
Yeah.
And so, there is a yearly event, a citywide Good Friday service is one. And, you know, if there's any area we can unify very, very clearly on, it's around the cross.
Yeah.
And so that's been a great unifying point for us. And this is actually the first year Victory's had a chance to host it.
Yeah.
In part because our auditorium is not the largest in the city, and we do need a larger auditorium for this. So it was a bit of a risk. Everybody was kind of asking, Can it happen?
Are you sure?
Will it work?
Yeah.
And we did pack it out, but
how many people did you have?
Over 1,000 between two services.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was a good, good group, and for us, that's a crowd.
That's maximizing your space, right?
Yeah. 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 We were ready to go to overflow and things like that. We didn't need to, but it was close.
Yeah. So the parking lot, was it full too?
Or? Yeah, because our church is downtown. Yeah. So our lot would be full with 100 people, honestly.
Okay.
So, you know, then we use the street parking, and that's typical for us anyway on Sundays. It's not unusual to walk a couple of blocks to get there, like a hockey game, I guess, or that kind of thing. And then, but we also had the privilege of, we have a wonderful church right across the street, Church of God.
Right, yeah.
And so they've got a parking lot as well that we were able to utilize, which I think we might just tell our people now every Sunday.
Just
hey,
they might do the same.
Yeah.
Well, we came to the 9. It was a great service. Loved it. Just so impactful and in worship and communion, sharing that together with other people from different churches. And we had no problem. We came a little bit early, though, because we knew it was probably going to be packed.
Yeah.
And it was a snow day in Moose Jaw, too.
It was.
The weather wasn't great.
A few people might have missed because of the snow, for sure, especially ones that needed to use the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've been reflecting on over the years in ministry, I'm sure you guys do this as well, is how the size and the shape of your building can really shape the mission of your church. I mean, have you guys found that with your own building, like your location and all of that? How has size and shape influenced the way that you guys do church together?
Who do you want to answer that?
You go. Yeah.
I guess, lots. I have lots of thoughts on that. I mean, first of all, we are downtown.
Right.
So we do have a physical presence with people all over the city, for sure, but in particular with people who hang out downtown a lot.
Right.
And that includes street people. It also includes the businesses around us.
Yeah.
So those shape our mission significantly and shape the feel of the church, the heart of the church.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be a part of a suburban church. It was way out in the suburbs.
Sure.
And we still did a lot of mission with the poor, but it was leave the church, go down to another church that lived amongst the poor and serve with that church.
Yeah.
Now it's like They are us. We are them.
Yeah.
Our mission is exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just part of the daily life of the church. So that shapes mission.
Yeah. You didn't build your building from the ground up, though. I mean, you inherited an old building and you fixed it to. Yeah. So how is that?
Yeah, we're in an old grocery store. It used to be a Loblaws, a superstore back way back.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's, I mean, you'd have to be quite senior to remember those days. Even the stories they tell of their shopping experiences, they're foreign to me. I don't know shopping like that.
Yeah.
They talk about a piece of paper they tick off their groceries on or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what that means, you know.
Yeah.
But
they pay by check.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember those days.
So anyway, we inherited that building. And by the time we got it, it was parceled out to rental property. Mm-hmm. So it was piecemealed, like you would experience in a downtown of an older city.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually took advantage of that. We bought the building and it became a Victory Plaza, we called it. It was a mall, really.
Okay, yeah.
A mini mall. And we only occupied maybe less than a fifth of it.
Okay.
The small church. And then we rented out the rest. And we were landlords. And that actually paid the bills for the first 10 or 15 years in that building. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, some say that churches today can think of their buildings mostly pragmatically. In other words, when they think about their building, they think of it in terms of its utilitary function. You know, how can we get the right people in here and how can we utilize it in this way? But they don't really think of it as sacred spaces. There's probably some ecclesiological reasons why that has happened, shifts, especially with evangelicalism. But do you think it's fair to say that we've lost our sense of the value and meaning of space or of place in churches? Is that a fair criticism, Jeff? Any hot takes on that?
I definitely think that our tradition has reacted against, extremely opulent worship spaces, and opted for worship spaces that were much simpler, but still used architecture in intentional ways to communicate values. For instance, putting the pulpit would be the most prominent place in the auditorium, and so certainly there would be a sense that the pulpit is a special place as opposed to other spaces within that worship space. But definitely we don't have the same. There isn't the same sense of using architecture to communicate transcendence as, say, you go into even a modern, recently built Catholic church, say you go into, and then there has been, the thought that they put into their architecture to communicate, God's transcendence and presence in there is certainly a much different view of space than we have in our tradition.
Yeah.
So, there are, you make choices and there are advantages to considering your worship space, calling it the sanctuary.
Right.
And having it as a set apart space. I mean, there are some, it's valuable. I think it helps people to enter into a mindset of preparing for worship when we do set apart spaces for that. But there's also, that can also be a barrier for some people, and especially if you want to invite new people who aren't familiar with this whole weird church thing and you want them to feel comfortable, then a more modern and maybe utilitarian space can be more comfortable for them and make it easier for them to enter into what's happening in the worship service.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I think of our modern worship spaces, even the pulpit's kind of gone. Like it's more, right? We don't have these big ornate pulpits. It's music stands or small tables and stools.
Yeah.
And in many ways, we've designed our spaces for places where people can experience the gospel. And so light, video and whatnot. And I think it's designed to contextualize the gospel to a modern audience who's maybe that's
true.
How they...
What they're familiar with.
Yeah, they're familiar with and how they...
The language.
Truth. Yeah, yeah. But you guys, Dan, don't you, in your kids' space, have like the story of God or something downstairs? I think my daughter was sending some sort of a
Yeah, there's definitely murals and so forth that do that. And I do think even, you know, the way you design your foyer, the way you design or redesign, you know, when you're doing renovations and so on, it is great to ask a question like, how do we tell the story of our church?
Yeah.
How do we tell the story of the gospel?
Yeah.
What are we communicating by these spaces, by how, you know, if you have very small foyer, for example, what are you communicating about the fellowship
of
the church?
Oh, yeah. Get you in and out. That's
sure. So there's all these different things. And I think you can take advantage of different things depending on the space you have to work with, too. One of the big pieces of our particular space is that our sanctuary is quite long in one direction and narrow in the other.
Right.
And we've chosen to turn it kind of sideways, I guess you could say, so that it only goes so many rows deep and it's a long ways wide.
Hmm.
And what that does is it keeps the people close to the pulpit, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you turned it the other direction, you'd have a long, you know, you'd have a lot of rows back and people would be quite distant.
Yeah.
And it's been a real advantage to us to have people close so that, you know, you can put 300 people in the room, but it really feels like 50 people in the room or 80 people in the room from a sense of connection and community and so forth. So there's different things that you can be intentional about.
That's right.
Whatever your context is.
Yeah. And that design's brilliant because, I mean, if you want to create a sense of community or unity or solidarity among the people of God, that's a great way to do it. I wonder if our theology of building has been influenced as well. I mean, just from the Reformation and this idea that the church is not a temple. The church building is not a temple.
Right.
The church building is not, you know, but rather we are the temple. We are the, you know, the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit as the people of God. And so, almost as a reaction against that, you have to go to this building to experience the presence of God. We're saying no. It's the people who inhabit the building where the presence of the Spirit of God dwells, and so there's a bit of a reaction towards that, and then I think it pushes us towards more of a utilitarian understanding of the building. Like let's not make this building sacred, you know, because we're sacred. We're supposed to as the embodied people. Theologically, I don't know. I think
that's a real challenge. Yeah. And the idea, you know, what is just physical and natural, and what is got some supernatural element to it? Those are challenging questions around your theology, and you can almost turn things into magical feelings if you're not careful, you know, and start, you know, this baptism water is special, and somehow, well. It is, because we've set it aside for that, but does it have some sort of special power to it, or is it just going to make you wet, you know, and so forth? So
those are
interesting theological conundrums.
Yeah.
And yet I really think it is important to note space is holy in part because of what God does in that space. So like we rented a place for years and years in a previous church I was a part of. And when we moved into our own building, you could have thought that our own building was a more holy, more set apart place because we're rented in a community center.
Right.
But it was in that community center that God moved in people's lives. And so for them, changing buildings, changing rooms, changing spaces was very disorienting, right?
Yeah.
Because that community center, which certainly was just very plain and didn't architecturally look at all special in some sort of church sense, it was a holy place for them. It was a place they had encountered God, come to Christ, all of those things, and moving that to a new place is a difficult process for people. So to acknowledge God moves in spaces, you know, it was in the upper room, the Holy Spirit came.
Yeah,
it was
for
in,
sure. Yeah.
You know, there are rooms and spaces where God is at work, and acknowledging that is good.
Yeah, thankfully the church didn't stay in the upper room.
Exactly.
They had to leave the upper room, and they didn't stay in Jerusalem, but God pushed them out of Jerusalem to Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the earth as well.
I think, though, it is, like you alluded to it, it's helpful for us to have a space where I go. This is the space where I worship. So when I go in there, as I take in that space through my senses, my body knows that this is, I am going to worship now. And so it's not like God needs us. Oh, well, God's stuck in the temple here. No, it's that spaces that we set apart help us to do certain things. Like I have an office where when I go in there, I'm in the mindset of I'm going to work. And so I think it's good for us to to help our people by designating spaces in a, you know, for use in a certain way. And I remember at one of my churches, we were in the middle of changing the name of the worship space from the sanctuary to the auditorium.
Okay.
And because it was okay if the young people played hide and seek in the auditorium,
right,
but you better not play hide and seek in the sanctuary.
Right.
That was forbidden. So it can be, and I think there are like how far can you go in your worship space before you think, okay, maybe we're pushing the limits here, and it's no longer, you know, it's no longer helpful if, you know, if we don't have any sort of sense that this is a place where we expect certain things to happen.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to remind ourselves that, pre-Constantine, probably pre-second century, there were no church buildings. Like they basically gathered in homes as family units, and that's how they worshiped together. And so that's not to minimize the importance of buildings and value, but I mean, the church in so many parts of the world today where it's thriving and it's blossoming and blowing up, they don't have church buildings. Like that's not a consideration of those. So the disciple making movements that are happening, say in China or in Iran or Afghanistan, and where the church is underground, this is a foreign conversation to them in many ways, right? But for us who are in the West, who have a long history of church buildings, I think it's probably a little bit more relevant and important,
and maybe hopefully good to take advantage of if you do have a space to honor that. I know when I a few years ago I was quite taken with these beautiful buildings that you know express the transcendence of God and worship and so on.
Yeah.
And I just loved the concept of that. It was a new concept to me, and I was enjoying learning about it. And I went to a pastor of a very traditional church here in town, and I was like, "Oh, isn't that amazing? That's beautiful." And he just laughed at me. He just thought that was hilarious. He's like, "It's not actually like that. It's more of a competition to see who can have the fancier space and the nicer organ. And you know, one guy gets an organ in town for $400,000, the next guy wants one for $600,000, and blah blah blah." And I don't know what the right word would be. I think I was saddened by the cynicism.
Okay. Yeah.
Like I was like, "Oh, I guess that can happen anywhere."
Yeah.
Like you can lose something that is good and beautiful,
right?
By just sort of
fallen nature, the fallen nature, of who we are, yeah. Well, this week we're talking about space with our guest. His name is Brad Moffitt, and he's the lead pastor of Mackenzietown Church in Calgary. And we're going to talk a lot about how the location of his church actually shaped and formed the church's mission, and it caused them to think, forced them to think much more creatively about church multiplication. So that's going to be a great conversation. Thanks for joining us, joining in this morning, guys, and being in studio. And good to have you back, and we'll be back again next week.
Awesome. Great to be back, Rob.
Thank you, sir.
Church in the North is a production of Briarcrest College. We love hearing from our listeners. So if you have suggestions for topics, guests, or if you have questions, our email address is podcast@briarcrest.ca. If you like what you're hearing, leave us a review, share your comments, or hit that subscribe button for more content from north of the 49th parallel. Here on the Church in the North podcast, Brad Moffitt, he's the lead pastor of Mackenzietown Church in Calgary, Alberta. Brad, welcome to Church in the North.
Hey, this is it is a privilege to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, hey, we want to talk about your church, but before we do that, want to start with a little bit about you, your backstory, your calling. I wonder if you could just talk to us real quick about some of the key moments that led you into ministry.
Yeah, it's I've been a pastor for 24 years, give or take, and wow. I never thought that I would be in this position. I didn't desire it in any way, shape, or form. I grew up in a really big church out east, and when I looked at the pastoral staff there, they were fairly academic, super smart guys, all the way from the senior pastor to the youth guy. They were just not like me, and I never saw myself being like that at all. So I just didn't. I had a heart for Jesus. It wasn't that important at the time, but circumstances led me to the place where I went to a Bible college in Saskatchewan, and and just wanted to play basketball. That's why I was there. And it was there that I started to see men in particular that loved the things that I loved. They loved people. They loved sport. They loved just interacting, and they were normal. And they were smart, but they saw some leadership qualities in me that I never saw in myself. And there were some key individuals there that really took me under their wing, and it was amazing. And I never thought ministry was something that I was going to do, but I saw that there's something that they would instill in me. I think my parents obviously did that too, but and then after my year three, my basketball was, I was really enjoying it. I was enjoying just understanding what faith was to me, but I didn't know what the future held. I just kind of took classes for the sake of taking classes. And so, I went back home for a year and just trying to navigate what that looked like. And I was working at a very good job. I was customer service. I knew I loved people. I loved, making people happy. I'm a people pleaser by nature, which is terrible, but I think a lot of us are. And I was doing that, and I was really leaning into my faith. I was going through a study, the Blackaby study, Experiencing God, and with a group of guys that were all in the same place. And we were just navigating that. And I remember there was a time in like a February of that year, where I was doing my job. I was meeting with clients for this organization, and I was the representative of the company. And so I was just 21 years old, just trying to do what I'm doing. And I drive all day long going to different clients. And there's this CD. Some of you remember what CDs are.
I remember.
My younger staff are like, what? My kids are like, what? And it was called City on a Hill. And there's this band called Third Day. And there's this song that came playing on that CD. And every time that song played, I would just get emotional. I'm not sure why. And it was just this gut feeling of, it almost is like God said, I feel like there's something different that I want you to go into. I didn't know what that meant. And so I talked to some mentors of mine, and I'm like, what does that feel like? And they're like, well, why don't you just finish off your degree and see what that leads? And so I went back to the school in Saskatchewan, Briarcrest, loved that place. And that's where, God instilled in me, maybe you should go into ministry. And so that's kind of the process. In that process, I would say it was really not, I think God speaks to us the same way throughout our lifetime. I don't know if that's true or not, but for me, he gave me that kind of that little prompting, and he had some men in my life, some women in my life that would confirm that. They would look at scripture and say, yeah, I see that in you. And then, yeah, so I graduated. My wife and I, we were dating, we got married, and then I had this degree that I didn't know what to do with. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And so one of the men, that I really highly admired, he was president of the school that he just retired, and he went to go be a pastor in a city. And so he's like, Brad, do you want to be my youth guy? I'm like, I'll do anything for you, whatever you want. I don't know what it looks like to be a pastor. I didn't, you know, when you go to undergrad, when you go to Bible college, there's pastoral courses, and there's so many different courses you could take. I didn't take any of those. I had no idea, but he's like, come be my youth pastor. And that's kind of how it started. And I started to just see this, the joy of working in a local church and the joy of, having the privilege of walking alongside people in great times and in hard times, discipling, not having a clue what I'm doing. And 24 years in, I still don't have a clue what I'm doing. And it is just, yeah, there's been ups and downs, but that's been kind of the call that God's led me on into ministry. So,
yeah. Well, it's amazing to hear how God formed you through the influence of other men or other leaders in your life who spoke into you. And I think let's put a pin in that, because I think that's going to come into our conversation a little bit later when we talk about multiplication.
For sure.
So let's fast forward. How did you end up at Mackenzie Town Church then?
Yeah, I was youth pastor for 7 years. I have a desire to hang out with young people. That's kind of how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed that. But after about 6-7 years, I just felt this uneasiness. The church I was at was great. It was very conservative. And it almost seemed like, God wanted me into something different. And I didn't know what that looked like. I still loved the church, loved the people, loved what I was doing, but there was an uneasiness of just, yeah. And, there was success, when you look at it from a ministry standpoint, but yeah. So my wife and I were just praying, what does that look like? And we were at a conference, a pastor's conference that this guy, we got to know, and he's like, hey, I'm looking for a pastor to join us. Do you want to be that guy? I'm like, no, because he said, I want you as a youth pastor. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I love youth ministry, but I just feel I wouldn't mind doing something different. Mm. So he later called me 2 months later. And he's like, why don't you just come on staff? The interesting thing is, we had family in Calgary. So we were in Regina at the time, and we had family in Calgary. And so
yeah,
two years prior, I was visiting a friend of mine from college, and he lived in Mackenzietown. And mm. it was a brand new community. And I remember saying, like, driving into community, this is 2 years prior. Mm. I remember saying, like, if God ever wants to call me to Calgary, this would be a really cool place to serve. And so I didn't connect the dots until I actually went to go visit, when, you know, the candidating process you go through. And I'm like, oh, I remember driving into the neighborhood going, this is the place a couple of years ago that I said, oh yeah, this would be a cool place to serve. And so that's how God called us here. And so I was like, it was at the time about a 7-year-old church plant, and they had a senior pastor and then a worship guy. And so I was the third staff member. They had a children's person as well. So I was I just wanted, he didn't want me to do whatever he didn't want to do, for lack of a better term. So
that's what assistant or associate pastors do, man.
Exactly. You know, like, and
that's how you learn.
Exactly. Is how I learned. And I did small groups, and I coached the youth pastor a little bit because I'm just coming out of that. I worked with the community because he was very gifted in ministration, and but he wasn't amazing with people, and I'm okay with people, and so it was a really good fit. And so after about 4 years, he tapped me on the shoulder and he's like, you know what, I'm going to another job. Do you want? So the elders board said, do you want to be the lead guy?
Okay.
Yeah. Now remember, I didn't subscribe to be a pastor in any way, shape, or form. So preaching would be something that you're like, you're kidding me, right? Like, my friends that know that I'm a lead guy now, they just laugh because they were like, there's no way you would ever, Brad would never be like that. But again, God has a sense of humor, and I think if you're willing and you're open. And so we just said, okay, we'll try. Like, you guys know that this isn't, I don't think that's my gifting. I think I'm a good leader. I think I'm okay with people, but like speaking every Sunday or 40 Sundays. And so we just went into it, and the church is incredibly gracious. Mm. And so that's where we find ourselves. And it's interesting. Wow. We can go back to just men, just people pouring into your life. The degree that I had in Bible college, so let's go back 10 years prior. I didn't have to take any preaching courses in any way. Like, that wasn't my degree.
Like the biblical studies degree, or?
It was a degree called sports ministry.
Oh, and that one. Yes.
Yeah. And, I still think it's the greatest degree, because what it was, you're taking the love of Jesus and the love of the local church, and you're using sport as a platform.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so that, I still love sport. It's March right now. I don't know when the podcast is coming out, but it's March Madness. And so it's like my favorite time of the year. And so that was my degree, and that preaching wasn't part of it. But the guy that was in charge of that degree, he became a friend, but in my third year, I think, he said, Brad, I want you to take a preaching course. And I argued with him. I'm like, there's no way. Like I don't need it for my degree. You don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I put my foot down and he's like, no, I'm the boss. I can do what I feel like God is going to use this at some point in your life. And so I had to take a preaching course with an amazing preaching, mentor, Preston Bush is his name. And, mm-hmm. and he taught me and I fumbled through it and it was probably embarrassing for him, but fast forward 10 years, God just said, yeah, I want you to start doing that. And so that's what I've been doing. That's one of my main responsibilities here at the church. And yeah, and the church is continually to be gracious. So,
so during those 4 years, when you were the, assistant or associate, whatever your title was, did you have opportunities to preach then?
Yeah, like he was getting tired. I think he was a church planter at heart, and church planting is hard and there's a lot of heavy lifting. And I think he was just getting tired. So, we would sit down and I would probably preach once every 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay.
And, it's a lot easier. It's a different responsibility when, you know, you have 5 weeks to prepare and weeks and so that's, I would get into the rhythm of that. But then once I became the lead guy, it was one of my main responsibilities. And so that's just different. And so the church allowed me to learn on the fly and allowed me to, you know, make mistakes and go too long, or I don't think you're ever too short, but, a lot of the time I just think when I'm preaching, I'm learning the text myself. Like it's exciting when I'm just trying to figure this thing out myself and I get to communicate it, as I'm learning it. Now, of course I've learned it before, but just, I'm not that guy that knows everything. I'm reading that week or that month, I'm reading the Greek words to try to understand, like, what does this mean? And the church has been so good that way. And so now, they let me be myself, which is really nice. So yeah, I love it.
Great. Well, I want to talk about your church building, first of all. I mean, it's got a really unique design and location. Like, if anyone wants to go to your website, you'll see the picture of the church building, from the front. And it looks like it's something from the deep south. It looks like it's got like Corinthian columns, this beautiful white building in this amazing community. Talk to us about that. Like, why is the building designed like that?
Yeah, it's an interesting building. It's the first thing you see when you go into Mackenzietown.
Yeah.
For your listeners, Mackenzietown is a neighborhood in Calgary that has about 25,000 people in it. But it's created to be a small town within a big city.
Yeah.
And so the developers of Mackenzietown, they wanted it to feel like a New England town. And so the very first homes that were built have porches on the front and they designed, we have this main street that's like a small town main street, and it's just picturesque. There's a gazebo that weddings are held there. It's just this gorgeous little town in the big city of Calgary.
Yeah.
And so, back 22 years ago or 23 years ago, there was about 15 people that were between the ages of 50 and 70. And they were part of a church in the northeast of Calgary here. And they said, this new neighborhood of Mackenzietown, they need a church. And so this group of like 15 seniors, I would call them, I'm getting up there my age. And they would say, like, we need to plant this church. But they didn't have a pastor. They had no plans whatsoever at all.
Just a building. That's
even a building, nothing.
Okay.
So they, Deerfoot is the main road in Calgary at north south. It's the main road, and Mackenzietown is right off of it in the south end. And at the time it was the last community of the south in the community of the city. And so they went to the developer and they're like, hey, can we buy a piece of land? And the developer said, yes, like we designed this to be this really small town community in Calgary and we need a church. And so they essentially gave this group of people the land. And it's the first thing you see in the community.
Yeah.
Like you come in and it's like this little traffic circle. And the church is there now, but they said you can have the land for very, very small amount of money, but you need to build this church. And it was a picture of a church that was based out of New England. And and they said, we don't care what it looks on the like on the inside, but you have to build this exact church.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
They gave the specifications for the look and the size and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no options. It was, if you want this option, this is the church. So yeah, so when you see the church, it's because the developer said, we want the neighborhood of Mackenzietown to look like this New England community. And in order for our neighborhood to look like New England, the church needs to look like that. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Calgary is interesting in that sense. Like they've got all these little communities, and they're all looking a little bit different. Like it's, so if you talk about Calgary, you got to talk about a region in Calgary. And Edmonton's like that. And it's, Edmonton's got its own like Twilliger town that's similar to Mackenzie, right? They're kind of the same design.
Yeah.
So this, but Mackenzie's like this walkable community. Porches in the front, garages in the back. So they're trying to build this sense of connection and connectedness, right? So, tell me what's Mackenzietown like? Like what kind of people live in Mackenzietown, you know, in terms of
the best people in Calgary, in my opinion, Mackenzietown is just, it's full of young families. We are the suburbs.
Yeah.
So full of young families. And that is progressed. When I first got here 17 years ago, our children's ministry, we only had at the time the size of the church was about 100-150. And if you know the church world, typically it's like 1 to 3, I think. And so you'd have 30 kids. Well, we would have 100 adults and 100 kids. Because there's families and so that's what our neighborhood's like. It's obviously grown up. And so now we're seeing the progression. Now as the kids are moving out, now young families are moving back in.
Okay.
And so we're second wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're seeing as a community, it's a lot of young families. But it's unique in that there's a large number of seniors, buildings. And so we have young families and then seniors and, not a lot of high density. There's a lot of single family homes. One of the unique elements of Mackenzietown is that, we have the highest per capita in the city of single parents.
Oh, wow.
And so I don't think from what I understand, there's more divorces here than anywhere else, but it's housing is super expensive anywhere in Canada. Mackenzietown is just, it's a little more affordable. If you want a nice neighborhood, a safe neighborhood, Mackenzietown is probably the quintessential place to move. And so a lot of single parents, move into the neighborhood. So yeah, so that, yeah. that, so very family centered, very, very eclectic mix of people, but, yeah. And from a economic standpoint, there's a lot of middle management. So Calgary is a white collar city, oil. Yeah. We live and die by oil. And so Mackenzietown and the area would be middle managers. You would see a lot of engineers, just men and women who are kind of, they've been in business for about 10 years, 10, 15 years. Yeah. They bought a house and they're moving up the corporate ladder, as it were. So,
So I have to imagine that your building, by design is creating some interesting challenges. I mean, you said that you've got this disproportionately large number of children, who are part of your church because of young families. The building actually creates, difficulties, I guess, for you guys in terms of mission. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the building is a gift. It's amazing, especially if you are a church planter, to have a building is a gift.
Yeah.
But it has been a struggle for us for many years because when the children's ministry was so big, it's not as big now, still thriving, but the children's ministry space is small.
Yeah.
Because remember, it was designed and built by a group of people that were 50 to 70 that didn't really see children's ministry as not, they thought it was important, but they also didn't see the importance of it. They knew it was important, but they were guessing that, you know, we only need three rooms, and in those three rooms, you could fit maybe 10 kids in them. Well, so the main space we have in our children's ministry is actually meant to be the balcony of the sanctuary. Cause when a building like this, they were thinking only sanctuary, that's it. And, and the sanctuary main level can fit about 220 people. And then they're like, well, if we need more people, we can just tear down that wall and have a balcony. Well, that's caused a lot of problems because our children's ministry space is packed. Every Sunday it's packed. And so we've had to adjust, because a couple of years ago, like about 8 years ago, we had to add multiple services, not for the adults in the sanctuary, but for the children, because we couldn't fit the children. And we don't have any space for like to add, you know, add onto the building or adding like a cubicle, not like an extra ATCO trailer in the back. We can't do that. Right. And so that causes issues when there's children's ministry, but it also causes issues when it comes to like, adult ministry, because, there's not a lot of gathering spaces other than the sanctuary. So,
So like for mid-sized groups or teaching workshops and things like that.
Yeah. So we don't have a room that we could fit more than 40 people in, other than the sanctuary. So that causes a little bit of issues, because if we want to train a large group of people, we have to use the sanctuary, which is fine.
Yeah.
But you know, you know, when you've been in a space where it's too big and you only have a certain amount of people, you need that mass.
Yeah, you can't get to create a critical mass if it's too much space, too few people. Yeah,
no,
it's
really hard. No. So
we faced that that challenge here in Hildebrandt, because the chapel's so huge,
right?
And then if the student body's only occupying one third of the space, you feels like dead space for sure.
Yeah, and there's still a lot. There's still a lot of students. Let's say 300-400 students.
Yeah,
but in a room full of 1,500 seats, it seems empty.
Yeah, you get lost. Right? So building additional children's wings and whatnot, that's not an option for you guys?
No, it's not an option. That, when a new community is built in the city here, you have 20, 25 years where the developer has architectural control. So you can't just say, I'm going to paint my house purple because I like purple. You can't do that because it's against the bylaws of the community. And so in our community, for the first 25 years, the developer has control on what we can do and what we can't do. The developer was amazing and they were a gift to us, but, for us to add onto the sides, it was a non-negotiable because they wanted that idea of what that New England town looks like.
Yeah.
We've since passed that. But we don't have any space, on the sides to do that.
There's not to do that, right?
Yeah. So, as it was created, we don't have enough parking, and then we would have to have some things grandfathered into the building. So our building is 100 feet smaller than what it needs to be. Because if we were to build one more 100 feet to the building, we would have to add certain things to the building, like sprinkler systems. And so if we were to add anything, it would I don't think it would be worth it. So,
that's right.
And we're not able to anyways, there's not enough space to do that.
You know, I think this conversation, I love it because we're talking here about the, the intersection of geography and mission, or the intersection of, you know, space and mission, right? And there is an interplay and you can't ignore it. You know, and I know with Crosspoint, the last church I previously planted, we had a similar situation. We had this really large auditorium. Like we were gifted this building in 2018, and we're so thankful for our denomination for contributing it to us, and for the people who built it, and you know, the legacy believers who continued the journey with us when Crosspoint inherited it. But the auditorium was like 350-400 people, but the children's space was like for 50 kids. And then it's maxing out, and these tiny little classrooms in the basement. So we had disproportionately large auditorium, super small parking, super small kids space.
Yeah.
And so for us, we had to multiply services, because there's that 80% threshold, you know, it's this psychological barrier that once your space is 80% full, then you got to multiply or you don't grow. And we weren't reaching 80% in our auditorium. Like, we still had lots of space, but the kids space and the parking, I mean, we had parking lined up the streets. And so we finally said, well, we're taking up neighborhoods, because we're in like a neighborhood with like avenues and streets. Like, we're taking up people's parking spots and whatnot. We're like, we've got to multiply. And we did. And that was great. But it was the kids space that was the real challenge, because like you guys, we had so many young families, right?
Yeah. So you want to minister to the people that live by the building. And there's nothing worse than on a Sunday morning them being frustrated because there's cars in front of their house for hours on end.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. You want to have a great reputation. And so, it's a struggle.
Yeah. So, I mean, what it pushes us towards, if mission is more important than building, right? Yeah. If mission is more important than space, then it forces us into this new innovation.
Yeah.
Right. So you guys obviously had to start thinking about innovation, right? And this intersection. So what did that look like for you in terms of multiplication?
Yeah. I heard at some point some speakers saying like your biggest problem could be your greatest opportunity. And for us, our biggest problem was space and children's ministry space. And we were growing. And so we were like, what do we do? So if you come to Calgary, there's an amazing church just a stone's throw away from us. First Alliance, massive church.
Yes. Huge.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at that and I strongly believe in kingdom vision, strongly believe in cheering on, local communities and so First Alliance, they're going to reach a different kind of person than we are going to reach. And so we don't want to be a church that has, 4, 5, 6 different services, because if you really wanted to go to a much larger church, you could go to First Alliance, and I would encourage you to go there. So we have this really unique, opportunity at Mackenzietown, because you can only fit, like I said, 220 people in the sanctuary. And so it feels small. Now, for some of your listeners, that might be really big, but, for in a metropolitan city like Calgary,
right?
It's like a church of 200 is a good size, but it still seems homey. It still seems like a community. The opportunity that we have is that right now we have 3 services. And so everybody feels like it's a small community, but we have the resources of a church of 800 to 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And so what a great opportunity that is for us to be able to throw the resources into discipleship, into staffing, into whatever we want to do. But yet it still feels like a small community. And so as we're looking at the problems that we have, we're like, we don't want to have 3, 4 services. That's not kind of the feel that we want. And so that's where multiplication comes in. We've been a blessing to Mackenzietown, by being planted here. And about 10 years ago, we started thinking about like, how can we continue to be a blessing in the city? And so we have a multiplication mindset. And so that's kind of the direction that we have gone and that we will continue to go.
Yeah. So the option is hey, let's just build a building somewhere further out.
That's not even
on the radar, right?
Yeah. If we were to ever build a building, I would go closer to downtown, because too often I think churches they like to go to the suburbs that's where maybe land is. I think the downtown cores are starting to miss that gospel presence, and I'd love to do that. But we're called Mackenzietown Church. You can't just be like, hey, time out, we're just going to go to Okotoks, which is south of the city, Mackenzietown Okotoks. Like, we can't do that. And we're called here. Like, when we look at the story of the development of Mackenzietown, you always need to go back to your calling. Like, why did you, That's why, like, I think when you read scripture and it says, I'll remember your baptism. It's really important to always go back to, like, why do you do what you do? Like, Rob, you probably felt many times where when you're super frustrated or you're tired and you ask yourself, like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I even doing this? You always need to go back to when God tapped you on the shoulder, when you just had that feeling of like, this is what I'm created for. Like I'm created to be a minister of the gospel. I'm created to preach his word. I'm created to plant churches, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And so we always went back to like, why did God place Mackenzie Town here? And we need to be a gospel centered presence in this community. And so why would we love the people of Mackenzie Town so much. Why would we say, hey, it's about the building. We're going to move somewhere else. It's not about the building. The building is a tool that God uses, but it's about the opportunity for us to just to be an incredible blessing to our community, to be able to lovingly share Jesus for years. And so now we would never move our building. We would stay here and then look for other opportunities within the city.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about multiplication. What has that looked like? What does that look like for you guys as you and your elders and, you know, members of your team are praying together? What's on your radar?
Yeah. So I think about 10 years ago, we decided we want to be a church that multiplies. Mm-hmm. I think healthy things multiply. I always thought it would be a really cool thing to be part of that entrepreneurial spirit of starting something new. Yeah. I didn't realize how hard it would be, but, you know, I just, when I see like the Rob Chartrands of this world and you make it look so easy, right? Yeah. Just to go and,
smoke and mirrors, brother.
Right. Exactly. You're right. So we were like, let's be a multiplying church. And so, 10 years ago, that was our desire. Let's start doing that. And even today now, we're in the process of, we've hired some staff and we're putting together plans, to multiply, our ministry. We're going to start here on site. We're going to do that on a Sunday night and it's going to be a different feel. It's going to be a different vibe.
And so do you mean like a new service, like a worship?
Yeah, gathering? We'll call it a campus or a site because we want to reach maybe different people. We're looking for opportunities within the city to go and create another environment. But that hasn't happened yet. But we want to create that culture. We want to create that groundswell of people. Yeah. And then when the opportunity arises, we can move, without any hesitation. And God is so faithful and he's been so faithful here at our church. And so we're praying into it. And so we've been praying for a good 6 months to navigate what this looks like. And we've just come up with a plan and we've hired a staff member and we're going to hire a couple more staff and it's going to be its own feel, its own vibe. And then a new
expression of the gospel.
Let's call it that, a different same church, different expression. If that's the case. And then, so that's what we're doing now. We planted a church 8 years ago, 9 years ago and within the city here. And so we sent about 75 people, to another community. And so there's a healthy, thriving church in another community.
Yeah.
So it's in theory amazing. And I think as a healthy church, you're called to go and make disciples. And for us as a church, we have a great culture. I feel God continues to bless us. We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we take the ministry very seriously. And so as we do that, and as we look for opportunities, we were like, let's do this. Let's go plant that church. And so it was great. We learned a lot and there's a lot of sacrifice in church planting and multiplication that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the emotional toll it would take. I didn't realize that, you know, as a pastor, you love people. I think a good pastor, a good shepherd loves people and which is super, I think sometimes rare. But as you love people and as you disciple them and as you spend your life with them and you're vulnerable with them, when you send them out from a gospel perspective, you're excited about what Jesus is going to do. But I didn't realize how hard it would be because I missed them.
Yeah, there's right? a grieving in that. Yeah.
There is a grieving that I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. And there's opportunities to be really selfish at times too, because, you know, when you send people, you're giving them the freedom. And that's, I think Jesus gives us the freedom. That's what love looks like. Love is free. And so when you send people and you think this is what you should do, they have a freedom to do whatever they want to do. And when they don't do it, that's hurtful too. And so we've learned a lot. We've learned a ton of things we're looking forward to doing it again and we'll change things up and we'll,
yeah.
But, I love the idea of churches multiplying. I think more churches need to multiply. I think the gospel presence needs to be in every neighborhood of every city. And, and I'm an advocate for that. And it can look so different. It can look, I would love older churches that aren't thriving. I would love for them to have discussions with churches that are thriving, and maybe there's opportunities for them to hand over the reins, not because it's a pride thing, but it's like, hey, God's been faithful for many, many years. We have this beautiful building, like your story of Crosspoint. How amazing was it that a church gifted you a building, right? Yeah. And that is I think that should happen more and more in our country, because buildings are hard to find and ministry. So yeah, we're excited about what the future holds. Whatever
so,
that is.
So for the new plant or the new expression, let's call it have you guys gotten down crystal clear on what it's going to be? Like, is it going to be an independent church plant? Is it going to be a multi-site campus, like video to teaching? Is it going to be a multi-church? So it's a church within your orbit. Have you guys drilled down that deep yet?
We're just in the process. But it won't be a plant. It will be a campus of McKenzietown.
Okay. Yeah.
And the reason why we're doing that is I believe in using the giftings of the people that you bring on staff. And, obviously you're looking for certain things, but we have an amazing guy that is incredible with people, but he's a great leader, great recruiter, great developer, but he doesn't want to preach. And so my heart is I want you to use your gifts and we already have a great system in place. We already have, a leadership in place. We have a culture that we love. Mm-hmm. We have a, financial assistance and process that we already have. And so instead of bogging down this new entrepreneurial, startup, use your giftings and create, and we'll send 100 people, hopefully. But we already have the system in place so that we can continue to use. I think being a good steward is probably what we are called to do from a church perspective. And for us to be the best stewards we can is just to create another avenue, a venue that, you know, it'll use our children's ministry. So our children's ministry it'll be here and on the main campus. And then we'll just equip whatever campuses that we're at and they'll have staff, but they don't have to come up with the ideas. They'll be part of that team. Preaching will be a hybrid of video and live.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I mean, the theory goes with multi-site is, I mean, pastors wear three or four hats, the administrative hat, the shepherding hat, the leadership hat, and the preaching hat. And if you can take away one of those hats, it gives them a lot more time and energy to invest in other things. Like if you can take away the administration load and the preaching load, suddenly they're shepherding and they're empowering and building people up, and can maximize that. And especially in a smaller context, right? Cause you have fewer staff, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can turn them into a specialist rather than a generalist.
Yeah. And there's times like I would, at some point, if they want to become their own entity, great. Like that's perfect. Yeah. But you know, right now, just to be good stewards, that's where we're heading. Mm-hmm. And we have the resources now. God's blessed us with just some faithful people. And so we're able to, I don't want that guy to be fundraising all the time. Get him with people, get him to love and develop his team and so that they can minister to the community that they're part of and minister to the neighborhood that they're in. Yeah. So that's our desire. And so we've done it before. We'll do it again. We'll see what happens. So yeah. just be faithful. It's interesting. I just love to see if there's one main, a friend of mine asked me, what have you learned in the last 17 years? Just about who God is. And it's the faithfulness of the saints. Like, you know, there's the all-stars, but truthfully, it's just those like the faithful families that just are involved week in, week out. I'm so excited just to see another expression where more people can get involved just to be serving faithfully and behind the scenes. And I look forward to seeing what God's going to do with that.
Hmm. It sounds like your multiplication vision, also includes, raising up for developing emerging leaders.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I think part of my story is men that looked at me and said, you have some leadership gifts that we want to pour into. And so, at Briarcrest, I had multiple staff, spend quality time with me, and I didn't see it in myself, but they would take me out for lunch or regularly just speak into, my life. And that meant the world to me. And that really was the tipping point in what God was doing in my life. And I'm sure guys like my parents obviously did that. I'm sure there's people in my life growing up that did that, but you know, at the age of 18, 19, 20, where you're really just, you're trying to figure out who you are and what your giftings are. And that pressure of what the future holds is a major pressure. And you know, by the time you're in grade 9 or grade 10, people are asking you, what are you going to do for your life? Well, I'm 47 now. I still don't know. Like I'm just, but the pressure is so heavy. And so, that meant the world to me to have these guys like, I could name them, a bunch of staff members that probably are colleagues with you now, but, it meant a lot to me. And so for us as a church, we have a great community and I think we have a great staff culture and God has been blessing that. And we're seeing lives changed and many, many people getting baptized and the opportunity for kingdom impact. And so for us as a community, we're going like, how do we invest in the next generation? And so we're intentionally creating an internship program here that gives people an opportunity to explore their faith, explore what God might be wiring them for. And so we're working with many different schools and we just started it last year and we're developing it. And we had 3 interns this year and we're going to continue to grow that. And it's been very specific in not typically what I see in internship programs is cheap labor. And that's not what we want. We want to bring in, men and women that, might have a desire to go into church ministry, but they don't know, or maybe they know exactly what they want to do. And we want to expose them to what a healthy environment looks like. How do you make wise decisions? What does a good staff meeting look like? What does it look like to work with parents if you're working in student ministry? What does it look like? And giving them a well-rounded opportunity. And so we're leaning into that heavily. We're pouring resources into that heavily because that was influential on me. It was influential on our staff. And we want to give 19, 20, 21-year-olds or older opportunities to explore and go, I'm interested in church ministry, but what does a good environment look like? What does it look like to have leaders that invest in me? What does it look like for me to learn how to open God's word up and teach it in a way that that maybe – like obviously the schools are teaching that, but what does it look like practically to put together a sermon every week? Like we're really excited about what that looks like because we want to have the opportunity to tell other churches. We want to say like, Hey, Cross Point in Edmonton is looking for a children's pastor. We can say we have an incredible intern right now that she or he's been working with us for a year. This is his gifting. this is where he needs to work on, but he would be amazing for you guys. Hmm. I know you as like Briarcrest and the many different schools across this country are doing that, but you have so many different facets going on. But if we're investing in these young leaders, we can equip them, we can encourage them and give them amazing experience for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then send them out to different environments and for the kingdom's sake, right? Like we'll throw the resources in, but how can we equip them so that other churches, other local communities are impacted by what they're learning? So,
So are some of your internships then postgraduate, like students have graduated from college, but now they're like need a kind of an interim between that, or is it while they're students in college, or you're flexible either way?
Right now it's while they're students in college. Because we're just creating this. This is year, we're heading into year two. But we're super flexible. And so we're looking at, for next year, we're looking at, somebody that's been graduated, but he's looking into, working in with missionaries, but he would like to be equipped in something in an environment that we're really strong in. And so he's looking at coming on staff to just be equipped and to learn. And so that, I guess that would be postgraduate. But ideally we want people to, our gifting in our community is our culture and our staffing. And we want to give them an amazing experience so that they can see that, church ministry can be, it can be fun. It can be, fulfilling, and vulnerable. You can go through hard times, as you know, Rob, like ministry is, we have the privilege of walking with people in the best of times and the worst of times. Mm-hmm. And so we want to give them an experience that equips them in all ways. So,
yeah. Well, I know we sent one of our students your way this last year and, she had a tremendous experience. Just it really helped to help her identify her gifts, her abilities, solidify her calling as well, which is what we want from our internship, to be spiritually formed, and to develop great relationships with mentors, lifelong mentors. I think, it checked all the boxes, for that student. And in our Christian ministry program here, we're going through a redesign. We have been for a couple of years, but we'll be launching a new program in the fall, and internship is going to be a capstone feature of it. I mean, we want to send our students to churches, that are doing it well. I'm thinking through how can we really invest in this emerging generation of leaders, because we're seeing so few of them coming into the Christian colleges now. We want to make sure that we send them to places that aren't, like you would say, free labor, go get my dry cleaning and please get my Starbucks order on your way back. But rather places that would say, let's sit down and intentionally invest in this young person for the purpose of preparing them, for a life in ministry. And I mean, that's the design of our program too. I mean, it's that's what we want. But I also, I also want to see I'm starting to identify churches that are doing this well, but as you're thinking of it, like a post graduation apprenticeships.
Yeah.
Because if you're a children's pastor major or say a youth pastor, you're going to find a natural landing place. Typically churches can hire you right out of college into those roles. Yeah. But if your heart is say a pastoral ministry or associate, you're 22 years old. I mean, you don't have a lot of water under the bridge. What do you know? Right. And the churches that might want to hire you might be really desperate and it might not be the best thing for you when you're 22 years old. Like it'd be very challenging. And we're seeing the resiliency studies saying like 50% of young leaders quit within the first 5 years, like because it's just too hard. And so I have a vision, and I'm sharing this with you, and I'm going to continue to share it with our listeners post-graduation apprenticeships, 2 or 3 years of investment from churches where young graduates can go in and just have this opportunity to learn and to grow without that weight and that pressure, which is just going to help better prepare them, I think, for ministry, because so much of ministry is the development of pastoral imagination. You can't develop that in a classroom. You can't even develop it necessarily. You got to be in the church to grow that part of ministry. And so, if we can find great churches like yourself, I know some others that are doing this. Mm-hmm. I think we just need more and more churches to think that through.
There's a lot of pressure when you graduate, because you're expected to come in and be the expert, but at 22, you're not an expert in anything. And so to create an environment where someone can make mistakes, where someone can speak into their life or walk with them, like an internship should be walking with them. I'll show you what to do. You do it. And so, that I continue to scream that loud because I think churches need to give opportunities. And then after, 2 years, 3 years, I think they're well more equipped to go into an environment where maybe they can gracefully navigate leadership I think the opportunity that you have is there's now a network of people that they can turn to. You know, they have their profs obviously at school, but now they have practitioners that they can FaceTime with, they can phone call, they can be like, what do I do here? Because truthfully, like there's not a lot of us out there. Like I look at my undergrad experience, of all of the people that I went to school with, very small amount are in pastoral ministry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet 90% of them would say, I'm going to be a pastor for life. But most of them aren't because so many different variables, but how amazing would it be to create an environment where it is a healthy space. It is a space that the world needs you to be in church ministry. Or like maybe at the end of the day, you are in that internship and God leads you into the marketplace. Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You know what does it look like to be in the marketplace, but actively involved in your local church. I encourage you with that.
The new data, I just got it. It's coming out of EFC, is that in Canada, in the next 12 years, we will have to produce something like 650 new pastors every year in the next 12 years just to catch up.
Yeah.
And if I think of the number of, theological institutions that are out there, we're not even close to that. Like that's not even close. But I don't think the weight can fall on theological institutions. It can't. It's got to be a partnership between the local church and schools. And I see that now. I didn't see it as clearly when I was on the other side in pastoral ministry for 30 years, but now I see, we've got to figure out a way to work together. And I think what you're doing, apprenticeships, internships, is such a significant part of that plan and God's plan to raise up a new generation of pastors. It's just got to happen.
Yeah. Keep it up. And your school is a catalyst for that. You guys love the local church and you stand on God's word and it's not easy. And so as churches, if we can partner with you guys and support you as well, that's and not just you, but all other schools, just to cheer you on. And we have a different skill set that the academic world does.
That's right.
And so how can we be a support to you guys as well in whatever you're doing? So,
Well, let's do it together, brother. Let's do it
all
together.
Right. All right.
Hey, I wonder, Brad, is there a final word of encouragement that you could give to our ministry leaders who are out there listening today?
Yeah, it's one of my mentors. He'd always write cards to people, and at the end of it, he would always say, "Keep on keeping on." And at the time, I thought nothing of it, but. Ministry is a grind at times, but as I sit with our staff here, we always remind ourselves of what a privilege it is to walk with people and what a privilege it is to serve a faithful God that, even when it seems like he's not working, he's always up to something. And as a friend of mine always says, he's never not up to something. And so I just think if you're in ministry, it is just always being reminding ourselves of how good God is and how faithful He is. And, and we just need to keep going on. And I think podcasts like this, the opportunity just to reach out and find some support with the people around you. I think pastors, we're lone rangers at times, and I know I am. But I think an opportunity like discussing, like you and I, Rob, we could talk ministry all day long. Yeah. But too often we're so ingrained in just our tasks that we don't support one another. We don't pray for one another, and I don't reach out enough. And so I think when we're doing what we're doing and God's called us to it, just that grind, just knowing that God is faithful and He'll accomplish what He needs to accomplish. So yeah.
Yeah. Amen, brother. Yeah. Brad Moffitt, thanks for joining us on Church in the North. Hope to get
thanks,
you back
man.
Here again. Yeah.
What a privilege. What a privilege. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Church in the North podcast, a production of Briarcrest College. To learn more about Briarcrest, visit briarcrest.ca. We all know that when something is good, it's worth sharing. So why not pass on today's episode to a ministry leader or someone who might find it helpful? Also, don't forget to leave us a review, share your comments, or hit that subscribe button. We love hearing from you. So you can email us at podcast@briarcrest.ca. For more information about the podcast and our hosts, visit churchinthenorth.ca. Thanks for listening. Until next time.